Welcome to AI in Journalism. I'm Yumi Wilson, a journalism professor, branding expert, and your host. In this podcast, we'll boldly explore the intersection of AI and journalism from its origins to its implications for newsrooms. We'll discuss the symbiosis of AI and human judgment, ethical concerns, and most importantly, arm you with the knowledge to navigate this brave new world. Whether you're a budding journalist, seasoned editor, or simply an AI enthusiast, join us as we fearlessly uncover the future of journalism in the age of artificial intelligence. Welcome to AI in Journalism. Welcome to another episode of AI in Journalism. Today, we have a very special guest, Olivia Smith. Olivia is an Emmy Award-winning journalist with more than 20 years of experience in print, broadcast, and digital platforms. She pioneered next-generation storytelling at Disney, ABC News, Good Morning America, and ABC7. Now, she's bringing her expertise to the USC Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism, where I went, where she is an adjunct professor focusing on visual storytelling. She's also recently addressed visiting students about AI ethics and journalism tools, which we'll be talking about later. But that is not all. Olivia is also the founder and CEO of Media Consulting Coaches, which offers on-camera training and content creation courses. She's also the creator of the blog Get Savvy with Social. Olivia, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here. I am a big fan of your show, so this is a real honor for me and a real treat.
That means so much to me, and it makes me so nervous also about interviewing you.
I'm nervous to be here, so it's mutual, but really, I'm just so excited. I'm thrilled. I think the work you're doing is incredibly important.
Thank you so much. So let's get started. So your career began with a front page expose for your local newspaper in your hometown when you were just 15 years old. How did that early experience shape your career path?
Oh, it feels like such a long time ago now, but at the same, it feels like just yesterday. It was actually a story about rats at our high school campus. I loved writing, and I told my mom that people were seeing rats at the high school, and she said, why don't you go pitch this story to the local town paper? And at that time, it just seemed like too much. I was like, I don't know if they're going to be interested in this, but they were luckily very supportive. They brought me on as an intern, and I told this story, and it became a front page expose, and it really launched my love for storytelling and journalism and reporting and investigating. From there, I just kept going with it. I was the editor-in-chief of my high school newspaper. I went to college to study print reporting. I later changed to broadcast, but it definitely shaped the future of journalism for me. And a big part of that, especially now in the age of AI, is reporting matters and storytelling matters. And I have a lot of my students who've expressed fear over AI, as well as, you know, interest and excitement, right? But at the same time, we're hearing about fear a lot. And I think the most important thing to remember, especially for journalists and journalism, is if you're finding good stories and finding stories that matter and telling that reporting that cannot be replaced by a machine. And that really just brings it back to this piece that I did and my first foray into journalism, which definitely, you know, led me down the path of it in my career. So I think that's what we can just say is, stick with the storytelling, stick with the reporting, and it's really going to shape you as a journalist.
I love that. And I really do think at the end of the day, what we as journalists or journalism professors or anyone who loves and understands journalism or wants to understand it is that what we do is we seek original stories, right? We go out every single day, we interview people who haven't already been interviewed or get new ideas and quotes. And I was saying this to someone just the other day that I think that's really what is going to be the thing that you can't replace with AI.
Absolutely. And I always say I find my best stories from talking to other people. That's how every story I've done that's turned into one of my top 10 favorites, it's been because just literally word of mouth. I haven't read about it in a newspaper. I haven't seen it on TV. I've gotten the idea because I've been in a location, someone verbally said it to me, and I started looking into it. And I agree. I think that's definitely going to be really important for journalists, especially now in the age of AI.
Absolutely. As we both are in the classroom teaching younger generations about good storytelling, well, I'm learning that many young people or students really kind of frightened or stressed or worried about going up to strangers, about talking to people. And since we're on this topic, can I ask you, what do you think about that and how do we help students overcome that?
That's so natural, that fear of talking to someone and feeling like, I don't know what I'm going to say, or I'm going to maybe not sound exactly what I want to sound like, right? We all have that fear. And I get that question a lot. How do I approach a stranger? What do I say? Or how do I even go about finding a source? And, you know, those are the first steps. So I would just say, don't overthink it. Don't go out, you know, if you're starting in the beginning and you're a student, don't go out looking for stories. Just talk to people. You know, you're shopping and you're paying for something. Talk to the person at the cash register. Ask them about their day. Ask them how long they've been working here, where they're from. You're sitting next to someone on an airplane. I know we all dread the airplane conversation that's going to last 8 hours, but I've gotten some great stories from talking to people on airplanes. So I would say if you're feeling overwhelmed with it, and if you have a little bit of time, especially if you're a student not on a deadline right now, don't go out looking for the story. Let the story come to you. And you could be having a conversation with someone and they say something interesting and you think, okay, I find that interesting, but no one else is going to find that interesting. Nope, don't think so. If you find it interesting, someone else is definitely going to find it interesting too. Have faith in yourself and then just run with it. That's that way. That's what I would say for starting out.
That is such great advice. And just to repeat it, because I think we need to hear it more than once, is have faith in yourself.
Have faith in yourself. And it's scary at first. It's scary. But if you see someone you want to approach, just take a deep breath and go for it. Be polite, smile, and 99% of the time they will be receptive. And if you have a bad experience once, don't let that get to you. You know, it's going to happen. I've had experiences where I've interviewed people and it, you know, maybe it didn't go as well. Or one time I got stuck on a bus and I showed up late for the interview and she didn't want to do the interview anymore. She was really upset and I explained to her the whole situation. It was out of my control. And then she did the interview with me. So people will have patience with you if you have patience with them and just really communicate as well.
Which brings me to my next question, which is about your amazing career. You have worked at Disney, ABC News, Good Morning America, ABC 7, and you've been developing storytelling techniques, from what I understand, interactive graphics, user-generated content. Can you share some of those examples and techniques?
I'm so glad you brought this up because the way I found this job, I think will also be really relevant to your listeners and to students out there studying journalism. I was working in broadcast and I really wanted to get into the digital space. I saw digital was the future. I wasn't getting my news on TV anymore. I was getting all of my news on my phone, but I was working in TV. So I said, I want a new job. And I literally Googled digital journalist jobs. And the job at ABC News popped up, digital reporter, ABC News. And I was like, this is fate. It's meant to be. And it took months to get the job. I was like, at one point, I thought I wasn't going to get it. It was a very long interview process. But I got the job. I got my foot in the door. And then I was at Disney almost a decade. And it was such a cool experience. I was really getting the chance to experiment with interactive storytelling, just as you mentioned. And some of the things I've done were working with drones, working with 360 cameras. One example with the 360 camera was we went up to a marijuana farm. It was actually a story I found talking to a woman at a yoga retreat. We did this yoga retreat. I met her at one of the sessions and she happened to say, after this, I'm going up north to trim marijuana. And I thought, that is strange. I have never heard of trimming marijuana. So I started looking into it and I saw that this was something a lot of people did for quick cash. And I pitched the story, went up to the marijuana farm, spent some time up there and took a regular camera. We were going to do like a mini documentary on it. And my boss said, hey, take the 360 cam. Let's get some shots. Let's see what happens. So it was kind of in the back of my bag. And finally, I took it out. I remembered and I spent some time going from location to location at the farm and gathering some cool, just 360 degree shots. And came back, edited it, and it turned into a whole second video that we did for the same story. And so that was a really cool new angle to tell the story, very visual, as you kind of got to travel through this marijuana farm and really experience it in full view. So at the time it was on Facebook and you could kind of click and drag the mouse around to get the full view while you were watching the video. That's just one example. Another example with drones, I pitched this story about Dead Horse Bay, and it was a horse rendering plant. Then in the 19th century, it was a landfill, and now it's a beach full of artifacts washing up from this landfill that wasn't capped properly. I pitched the story. Someone else I worked with pitched the story, so we ended up co-producing it. We went down, this was in Brooklyn in New York. We went down, started shooting, started doing interviews, and we both thought, we need a drone for this story. If we can get a drone, it's going to make this story incredible. And we were able to do that, to secure it and get those aerial shots. And that was really exciting too, because I think it just adds another element to the storytelling when you can get those shots. So yeah, those are two examples.
Let me back up to your first story about trimming. I did not know what trimming was. However, my son went to what's now called Cal Poly Humboldt. And I've learned, yes, this is quite the job for many people for a season or so. And what I find interesting is that it sounds like you had knowledge or had you taken courses that gave you this ability to use things like the 360. And then the second story you talked about, the drones, did you already have training in those areas?
That's such a good question. I actually did not have training in those areas, but I was fortunate enough that my company at the time had the funds to get those cameras for us and help us with that. So what I would say is not everyone has access to that, but now with these new tools out there, they might have access in different ways, right? So even if right now you're thinking, I don't have access to a drone or a 360 camera, I would say, see what is out there that's free that you could use, because we're seeing more and more things pop up.
So when you were at ABC7, you were deeply involved in managing and coaching teams. How did you foster innovation and creativity within your teams, given, you know, journalists tend to be, we're pretty traditional. We've been taught, you know, a lot of us are old school. How did you work in that environment?
It was challenging. You know, I think the way that things came together, first of all, I started that role the week of the pandemic. The week that everything locked down was the first day of my job as executive producer of Next Generation Storytelling at ABC7. So not only did I have the stress and anxiety of starting this new position that even I was like, oh, am I qualified for this, right? I have the imposter syndrome all the time, even more than a decade into my experience, like all the time. So I had to start it remote, but at the same time, that was also a challenge, but people were almost more open in a way to digital tools, to Zoom and to learning new things. So I feel like once we all came back in person and met in person, you know, we had been doing things remote. I had to introduce myself on Zoom. I had to work with people on Slack only, which was definitely difficult, but I also love the remote environment now. I think I definitely adapted to it. But once we got together and coming back together, that was also a different workflow to adapt to as well. So definitely has its pros and cons in terms of remote versus not. But going back to your original question too, in terms of innovation and inspiring teams and like kind of dealing with the traditional workforce, I would say just kind of going back to what we talked about earlier, having faith in yourself. Like there are definitely days of doubt, but knowing, you know, I was hired for a reason, I'm here for a reason. And I was a bit young at the time to be an executive producer, but the team I was leading also were young. So the reporters I was leading were our community journalists, and they were hired right out of college or after having only one job. So it was a new team that they were starting. They wanted to bring in this team of people who were digital natives. And my job was to work with them on the digital side while we also train them up to be broadcasts and to get to the level of our more experienced reporters at the station. Even though we had this team, you know, at every place, I feel like you experience a little bit of pushback at times, right? Whether it's in new ideas or wanting to try new cameras or like there's just no budget for it. I would say just keep trying. I think to keep inspiring people to do what they want to do, even if you don't have the tools for it. Just keep seeing how you can work together, what you can make happen. I always say, as a manager and as a team member, I try never to say the word no, unless it's illegal or unethical. I will say no in those two cases, but I try not to say no. So if someone's asking for something, even if I can't give it to them right then, it's not no, it's okay, this might not work right now, but maybe it could work next month. In the meantime, what else can we do? What else can we push for? What can I get you to help you achieve a different goal in the meantime? And then also as a team member, you know, you get, it's sometimes an innate thing to want to say no. If you're feeling overwhelmed as a journalist, you're working so much. You had mentioned, you know, even being in a traditional newsroom, sometimes people are jaded or pushing back on new ideas. And I think a lot of times our instinct to just to protect ourselves is to say, no, I don't have the bandwidth. I can't do this. I don't want to learn this new thing. You know, it's scary or I'm overwhelmed. And I think that's very normal. But I think if we could just take a step and a second to say, okay, let's not say no to this new thing. Let's say, I'll think about it. Just say, I'll think about it, and then kind of go from there. I think that's something that would be great for managers and team members alike.
I love that. Okay. I'm going to keep that in mind.
I hope that helps.
Okay. So here you have it. You are working with a young group of digital natives, as you mentioned, and they don't necessarily have the journalism experience. Perhaps they don't even have the journalism training, but it sounds like it worked out well.
Yes. It definitely did work out well. They all went on to become general assignment reporters and are very successful at the station. Absolutely.
Okay, well, and that leads me to a pop-up question because we're both teaching. I mean, my hope is to keep inspiring and educating, and it sounds like that's what you're doing too. But what about this idea or even argument that's being made that, you know, college or journalism schools aren't the best way to be the best candidate for the positions that are coming up and will come up in the future?
Honestly, I see the sides for both, but I think it's very unfair to say you absolutely need a college education to be a journalist. I actually don't agree with that. I think that you just need education. So I learned so much just from working. I really have learned almost, like you asked the question earlier, did I learn 360 cameras in a class or drones in a class? No, I learned how to do these things in my job. Yes, I did get my job because of my first job, because of a connection through college. So college definitely helps and definitely, of course, has benefits. And I really enjoyed my college experience, but I was very fortunate to get to go to college. And I know that's not the reality for everyone. So I absolutely do not think it's essential. I think that, let's say you didn't go to college, didn't have access to it or the funds, or it just wasn't for you. If you took on some type of internship or apprenticeship and you had fundamental skills or knowledge in writing or were open to learning how to be a good writer, I think it all starts with writing. So I think if you have those basic skills of knowing how to write, copy, edit, edit, AP style, all that stuff, you could teach yourself that online. So I think if you have that and just an eagerness and a willingness to learn and you want to go right into trying to work, I think that should be an opportunity for everyone. I'm not sure it is at many places, but I think it should be.
I agree with you on all counts. And especially, you know, I was recently invited to a SPJ Media Day at San Quentin, and I had never been to San Quentin. And I walk into this building and there are different rooms, different studios of award-winning podcasts and beautifully laid out magazines and newspaper front pages. And it really did remind me of what you just said, which is for sure, number one, if you can go to college, go and get that education. But if you can't, you know, try to have that opportunity to be an intern or volunteer. Or I noticed that many more schools like UC Berkeley are doing things with where they are providing resources. You know, some of the educators are going to San Quentin and helping to, you know, show people, hey, this is how you write, you know, for a podcast, or this is how you write a news story. So I really like the fact that what you're saying is what I also believe in, which is if you really want to do journalism, you can learn journalism in a variety of ways. But we both agree that there's something fundamentally sound about learning the ethics and the basics of journalism, which makes it different from, I think, a lot of different industries.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because as I finished speaking and you moved on, I was like, oh no, I said writing is important, but ethics are like the number one thing and what I wanted to talk to you about today as well. And yes, I did take a course on ethics in journalism when I studied journalism. So I had access to it that way. But I do really believe people can learn ethics in the newsroom. And I think that's really on the newsroom too. That should be something that every newsroom, you know, teach it, whether they're teaching it per se, or just, giving a handout on it or educating on what the newsroom does to new hires. That should be something that's like a staple in every newsroom. And I think if a journalist is also starting out, maybe they're freelancing and they don't have a college experience, that's something that they should also take upon themselves. And that's something you could learn from others or learn online too. So, you know, like you said, college, if you can't go, not necessary. I think if you can go, it is incredible. And I do think education, I just think overall bottom line, education is important. So it doesn't have to be in a college environment, but education in general on the basic principles of journalism, like ethics, absolutely necessary.
I agree. And speaking of, you know, journalism education, let's talk about AI, the role of AI. You know, I was saying this to Pete Pachal of Media Copilot, and I was telling him, you know, I didn't know AI was even, you know, used in any kind of journalistic manner until the winter of 23. You know, and yeah, what do you think about the role of AI in journalism education over the next decade?
Oh, that's such a good question. Well, I think AI is huge. I think AI is here to stay, absolutely. And I think that it's going to be a big part of education for journalists. And I think it should be. One thing I have seen happen in some newsrooms, or I've heard about through former colleagues, is that the newsrooms might be saying, okay, we're not using AI, no AI. But what happens is then journalists may be using AI anyway and not using it right. So I think the first step for AI and using it ethically as a journalist is with education, right? Whether that's in the classroom for students or whether that's in newsrooms. Poynter has a great handout on AI ethics for newsrooms that it's just like a template, which you could find online and the newsroom could go and fill out each section of, okay, we are using AI, we're not, we're partly, you know, how they're using it. So it's also available to the public. So I think just making sure the public knows how it's being used in that newsroom and for that organization is really important too. But yeah, I definitely think when it comes to education and AI and journalism, I think it's here. I'm hoping that students are open to learning it. I'm not going to say that anyone should embrace it if they don't want to. I'm an AI enthusiast. I love it. I'm very, very into it, but not everyone is, and I completely understand why. But I also think that comes with a set of ethics, right? A set of not only knowing the journalistic ethics, but also what should we be doing with AI and being very clear. Are we using it for light editing? What does light editing mean? Like, it's not writing our stories, but is it tweaking the headline? Is it checking for the Oxford comma? You know, everything that journalists would be paying attention to. Are we using it to create visuals? And if so, is it being labeled? Is it very clear to the audience how it's being used? So that's something I've introduced to my students a little bit. And I tell them, you know, this space of AI ethics and journalism, it's very gray right now. And that's because we're all still figuring it out. And I think the most important thing is that it's a conversation, that not one journalist, you know, in a newsroom uses the AI and doesn't tell anyone. Like, that would be very bad.
And that recently happened, right?
Yes.
Small newspaper. I've written a blog post on my website about that. And so it is happening, I think, because we're not talking about it.
And I think that's a huge problem. And I don't think the answer, I can't speak for all newsrooms, but I think the wrong thing to do is to say, don't use these tools, avoid, because people are people and they are going to use them anyway, and if they want to. So you can't control that. And I think the better thing to do is to say, here are the tools, here's how you use them. Please don't use them in this way. It is unethical, and here's why. Just explaining it, laying it out, why you can't have AI write all of your copy. And why you shouldn't want that to happen, because you're the journalist, right? I was speaking to another professor and he said it perfectly. AI can be like your coworker. And so it's something that you could work with, but it's not something that should do your work. And one thing I find really interesting about AI and journalism is that it overlaps in so many ways: content creation, research, and verification. You know, these are all things as a journalist when I started playing with AI. I'm curious if you felt the same way. When I was starting out with the Gen AI and chatting with ChatGPT, I was like, huh, you know, asking it ideas and asking it for source ideas and just kind of playing around with it. And I was like, a lot of this feels like journalism in a way too, in a strange way. A lot of these concepts overlap.
I agree. I mean, if we think about any type of search engine that we were using before AI, Google, Bing, Yahoo, you know, fill in the blank, we were doing research online and looking at a variety of sources. I think the big difference now, of course, is that I would know where the link was from. I could check out the website. I could do the about me. I used to teach that, right? I'd go, look, you go on a website, that's not enough. You gotta hit that about me button and find out who is sponsoring or supporting this. I think the big challenge had been, and I'm going to say had in past tense, is when I started using these tools, I started with ChatGPT. It just seemed the easiest. But what I noticed is they could not provide the sources. And that was a real problem. But most recently, many of these tools are providing either footnotes or citations. Some of them look more academic than they do like news style, meaning, you know, put the attribution in the paragraph. Like, for example, the New York Times reported yesterday, that kind of thing. I'd love to see that. I don't think that I've seen that capability yet. But what I am seeing is evolution. I'm seeing change. I'm seeing the awareness or the understanding that journalists are part of the equation when it comes to feeding information into large language models, and that our concerns are being heard.
Yes. And I think that's key, right? And I think just like you said, having those sources is so, so important. And I think it's only going to get better. What you just said reminds me of like the phrase we've all heard, the only constant is change. And I think that's what we're seeing with AI, especially. Like, it's constantly evolving, it's constantly changing, and hopefully it will continue to listen and respond to what we need in, of course, an ethical way, right? Sourcing. And I would love to see it also say, like, according to the New York Times. That would be really cool. That's hopefully they're listening.
Yeah. Why not put the link in it? I think I noticed this on Monica first, but they can provide links. And there was that long period of time where, you know, I'd say, you know, where'd you get it from? And the machine would say, I'm sorry, can't help you there.
I remember that. I want to say way back in the day. It was like only, what, a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago. How long ago now? But yeah, or like, give me sources. I remember saying, you know, give me sources. And even if it said, I can't help you, the sourcing it would give was like totally wrong, or the links didn't work, or it was just like, ah. And then it's just making sure, like, where is this information actually coming from? Having to then do your own legwork and going back and checking everything too. That's so interesting, though. That's a great point.
Okay. Shifting gears a little bit. You offer on-camera training and content creation courses through your company, Media Consulting Coaches. What inspired you to start this venture, and how do you see the demand for these skills evolving?
So I actually started this business with my husband, Michael Murray, who's also been working in media for many years. And we started it because we really saw a need for it. We had both been approached by professionals, by organizations like USC, really looking for this type of training. And we focus mostly on how to talk to press, print, TV interviews. We also help with career branding, content creation, and like you said, online branding and just really getting your presence out there, public speaking, all those cool things. And I do think having a good public presence these days is also having a good digital presence. It's key for professionals. And now everyone is on the internet. So just checking things online for references, legitimacy, I think goes a really long way. So that's kind of why we launched it. We wanted to help people looking to really hone their craft or to get their brand and message out there. We wanted to help them with that. So that's why we kicked it off. Thank you for mentioning it.
What are some of the services, you know, if I called and said, hey, I need help, what are some of the services I could get?
Many of our clients are interested in talking to press or about to talk to the press. So they might be doing an interview with a magazine or a newspaper. They might be going on a TV show or doing a broadcast interview. So we train them really on how to get comfortable talking to journalists and comfortable with a camera like right in your face. You know, you see people on TV and they make it look so easy. You're like, I could act. I could be a presenter. How hard is it? And then the camera's in your face and you freeze up and it's terrifying. So if you want to really get your message out there, whether it's for your business or something you're working on, a project, it's really great and very helpful to have this training because it's not intuitive. And we also do public speaking. We've done some public speaking sessions as well as content creation. I want to branch out more into AI teaching as well. So learning new tools, and I gotta take a few days to brush up on the tools. I feel like I'm learning new tools every day. So now I'm like, every day.
Every day. When I first got into this space and I thought, this is the space I want to inhabit, yes. But I realized very quickly that focusing on one tool or how things are now, not a good practice. Things are changing by the minutes, by the day. It's crazy.
Yeah. And that reminds me actually of the email I sent you earlier. I was like, should I bring this up on her show or not? But I think it's a good example. I was teaching myself a new tool because I'm always like, at least once a week, I want to learn something new in terms of AI. So I was learning Runway and it's image and video AI creation. And so I put in a photo of me and Yumi, for anyone listening. And it was just like a side-by-side photo, my face and her face. And I said to Runway, have these two women meet and shake hands. One sentence. And it literally like took our image, brought it out, and showed us facing each other and shaking hands. Now, it did give her a third hand and arm.
Just a third arm.
Just a third, like no big deal. And it also, my profile, as soon as I pulled away, I was like, that doesn't look like me at all. But
yeah, I felt like the profile didn't look like me, but I really thought it was amazing to see the visual, the front. And maybe I'll have to share that now because listeners are going to want to know.
Or you could cut this part out if you want.
We cut nothing out.
Oh, okay.
Actually, I don't really know.
Well, we'll see how it goes with the flow of the show. But yeah, so just like learning new tools like that, I think is important. Even if the tool's like not working totally well, and I'm sure if I spent more time with Runway, it probably would, but I just did it super quick. And I was like, this isn't working. And I know that should upset me, but I was so blown away with how cool it was that I was just like, dang, I want to spend more time on this.
You know, that feeling of being blown away is exactly how I'm feeling when I am using tools in this AI era, because the other week I tried HeyGen and, you know, I thought, okay, this is wild. They can make an avatar of me. They say they can make it sound like me. I'm sure I'm going to look robotic. And I did all the steps and I looked at the video. I just provided text. They turned the text into video and I looked at it and it was that moment where I was like, wow, that sounds and looks like me, you know? And it just almost, when I find those things happening to me, I take a step back and I think, wow, it's just happening too fast. Everything is happening so fast.
Yes. The speed is, it's crazy. Now I want to try this. I haven't tried it yet, but I'm like, oh, I'm a little scared to try it, but I'm intrigued.
I learned about HeyGen because Guang Ha Li, who I also know as David, met in China years ago and I was doing social media training back in the day. He mentioned HeyGen and it's been in the news because Taylor Swift is singing in Chinese. So if you've heard about that, that is HeyGen.
Very cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about balancing passion projects and professional life. And again, I think I've said on other shows, passion is overused, and yet I continue to use it.
It's a hard word to avoid.
It's true. And I actually did like a thesaurus check. I ran and I'm like, what's another word? And I just don't like any other word. So it's troubling.
That's why the AI uses it though. It knows that we love it.
It's true.
In terms of, I know you said in your past podcast, right? How AI had your students put passion into things. So that's what I mean.
Yeah. You know how, like, if you've been trained in journalism or you've worked in journalism, you can look at an AI tool, you can run something and go, you know, that's not right. That's not how we would source it. One of my concerns is that with students or with people who aren't trained or experienced in journalism, if the search result comes back, here's a news story, this is how you do it, the assumption could be, well, they have to be right because they provided it. How does one, you know, address the reality that just because an AI tool said it was right, that it's not?
Oh, such an important question. And this reminds me of like all the talk around misinformation, disinformation, verification, which has been going on for so long now in newsrooms, even, you know, way before AI or Gen AI. But I think it really all comes down to education and like starting, you know, in middle school, maybe, I don't know exactly the age, but I'm saying before college, right? We talked about people maybe not going to college, but elementary school feels a little young. So middle school, high school, I think it should be part of the conversation. I feel like media literacy should be taught across the country now more than ever. It is so important, especially because of AI and videos look real and they're not. And I can't tell. And like that freaks me out a little bit. And that's the part of AI that's scary, but it's here. I think it's here to stay. So I really think that comes down to educating and it should be fundamental, whether it's middle school or high school, but it should be taught. And I think it's something that we should just know to be aware of. Just like you learn how to, you learn math, you learn English. Like I think media literacy should be a part of that conversation.
I would agree. And I don't think starting in elementary school is too early, you know, that and financing.
Yes. Finance too. I'm like, why did I not learn this sooner?
You know, or, you know, the difference between, you know, someone's pay and the other person's pay, and maybe that'll help me choose a job or a career or, you know, degree.
Yes. These are things that we really talk about maybe in college and then after with each other, but it's like, this should be taught and it should be taught at a younger age. Absolutely.
Absolutely. All right. So that gets me back to something that you do that's somewhat different from journalism. You are a published children's book author and a certified nutrition specialist. Tell me more about being a children's book author. My secret is that I have been trying to finish a YA novel since the pandemic. That's like 4 or 5 years, right? And I just can't finish. So it really is encouraging to me when I hear, you know, someone who's done it, who's published. So please tell us, how do we do it?
Absolutely. Yes, I'll start with that. So I had been working on this book, Dog Detectives, Jacob and Bricks, or the idea of a series since I was a little girl. My dad and I would make up these stories. I was always really passionate about telling them and wanting to publish them. And I've worked on so many iterations of this original script. And I started pitching it around. I joined SCBWI, the Society of Children's Books Writers and Illustrators. Didn't have a ton of time to balance between work and everything, like to spend a ton of time pitching. So I did try. I feel like I put in a good amount of time pitching. I let it go for a few years. I got the SCBWI book. They have like an annual edition. And I got it again, I want to say like 2022. And they had always said, don't self-publish. Like they were very against that. But in this newest edition, not newest as of 2024, but at 2022 at the time, it said it had a whole new chapter on how to self-publish. And it's like digital has changed everything. The industry has, you know, been completely changed. And if you want to self-publish, here is how you do it. And, you know, from finding an illustrator to actually getting it out there and then marketing it. So I did that. And I actually did it for my dad's 70th birthday in time for that. So it was really important to do that for him. And also I had just had a baby at the time. So for my son, I wanted to do it, but that's how I published it. So it's definitely a different path, but I think if you're passionate about it, I say definitely go the original route. If you want, find an agent or just pitch the book directly. If that's not working for you, the cool thing about technology is you could make it happen. So I did that. I found an illustrator on Fiverr, very talented Ukrainian woman, and she put together all the illustrations. She worked with me. I got to help design it, which is cool because traditionally, if you write it, you do not help design it. So I really enjoyed that process. And yeah, that's how that came to be.
Congratulations on not just the book, but also your son. How old is he now?
Thank you. He's a year and a half.
That is so wonderful.
Yeah. It's a special time. It's a special time. It's also a time of, you know, bringing up these passion projects, very appropriately named passion. It's hard to find the time to balance it all, right? Like, I want to write more books. I want to do more stuff in the nutrition world. I want to spend time with my son. I have a full-time job, you know, and I'm teaching and all of these things. So yeah, it's an exciting time, but I feel like every mom probably struggles at the beginning with that, right? Of finding like the right balance.
Yeah. And I hear what you're saying, because I feel like that too. I don't know if it's women or people in general, but it's this idea that we want to do so much and we have so many things going on and it can seem overwhelming, but I really am encouraged by the way that it seems that you're balancing the work in your life with projects that are important to you. And, you know, you mentioned your father's 70th birthday. So that's a wonderful, you know, touchstone in life as well.
Definitely. I know people who work a lot and work weekends, and I've had crazy shifts as a journalist, right? Whether it's working all night long or on weekends as well. And I think just really carving out the time is so important. Like right now, I'm at the point where I'm like, if I cannot work at all Saturday and Sunday, like I would love that. And often I make that happen. And I know that's not realistic for everyone, but you know, that might mean I work late some nights during the week. So that's a little less time with my son then, but then I can make up for it on the weekend. So it's just trying to figure that out.
I'm there with you. And I really respect you for, you know, really talking about the challenges and difficulties that sometimes we don't talk about because we want to seem very professional and we want to, you know, no problem at all, right? So we talked about your book and you're saying that self-publishing is a great option. So that's definitely something to consider. And by the way, I have self-published a short story that's on Amazon. So I wanted to mention that and not say like, oh, I've never done it.
That's so cool too. Congratulations about that. And I feel like I saw that. Now I have to just go back and double check it, but that's awesome. So you've done it too. It's very inspiring as well.
Yeah. Thanks. And now let's talk about nutrition. What can you tell me? What should I be eating?
Oh, I know. I need to teach myself these lessons again every day. Because especially when you're working a lot and trying to balance family time, you're like, when do I have time to cook? I actually really got into this when I was working with Good Morning America. I was doing a lot of lifestyle reporting, working with a lot of people in the health space, a lot of fitness influencers and professionals. And I was just really, really drawn to it. So being a lifestyle journalist at that moment, it just made sense. I was looking for a way to, again, kind of combine my passion. I said the word passion. I'm like, oh, but to combine like my love for journalism and the lifestyle reporting with like my real life of what I eat, what I do, exercise and all that. So I took a nutrition course online and I got the certification. And then I just felt like it helped me add a little bit more to my reporting. Like it just, you know, it just gave me a few more skills that I didn't know before. But in terms of balance, I feel like having my son in the past year, that's one thing that I put on pause a little bit. I feel like with all of the things I'm doing in terms of like, sometimes like writing the book kind of took precedent. And then sometimes I'll go back to the nutrition stuff and be like, oh, and that take, you know, that has more time. And then other times it's like teaching. So like, depending on the time of the year, it's some of these things are more in flux than others.
You had mentioned that social media is incredibly important. And in fact, many people, and this is what the Pew Research Center says as well, which is that many more people are getting their news even from social media. So my question is, have you personally adapted your skills and approach to stay ahead? And what would you advise to others?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one thing I always tell my students is, as a journalist in this day and age, being on social media is super important. And I think being on the platforms that most people are using, right? So right now that's TikTok, Instagram, and depending on who you talk to, Facebook and Twitter. So it's also always shifting, right? But I think being on these platforms is really key. But what I would also say, and again, what I teach my students is you don't have to be on every platform. If you're not going to use it and put your work on it, don't feel like you have to be on like 10 different social media platforms. Really stick to the ones I just mentioned because those are the ones that are really, that many people are using. And then one way I kind of have adapted my journalism towards that and what I actually teach in visual journalism at USC is how to storytell on these different platforms. They're different. And we saw that shift when we were starting to put videos online. A lot of times people didn't want to see broadcasts completely replicated. They wanted to see it changed. And that could be something as it starts, you know, looking at the format. So YouTube, 16 by 9, TikTok, 9 by 16, right? So kind of changing the format and changing the style, whether some of these might be more source-driven. So you're seeing people tell their own stories rather than having a reporter in the piece. Other times, I think a host works really well. I think there was a point in time where BuzzFeed was doing that really well. And people on TikTok still do that really well too. So it's just kind of playing around with these different formats. I would say the best way to learn how to do it are to spend time on the platform and watch what's working. Watch what are you lingering on? What are you watching? What are you clicking? And then why does that stand out as opposed to something else? Is it really high quality? Is the story just really interesting? I'm a big believer in if it's a good story, people will watch it. You know, it doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be the highest quality. If it's a good story, people will watch it. So let's say the story is interesting. Let's say it's there, but let's say it's not like, oh my gosh, I'm going to grab the attention. How can we spice it up in other ways? Is it the editing? Can we do something fun with the editing and the music and the graphics? So a lot of things come into play. And the more time you spend on each platform, the more you'll see how they're all just a little bit different, but similar in some ways, right? Like I said, the formatting, 9x16, 16x9, those similarities share across certain platforms, but also like the quick editing. I find I could be watching a story where it's like not so interesting, but the way it's edited, I'm just like, I'm drawn to it. I want to keep watching, and like the quick cuts on people's faces or things like that. So I do think the more time we spend on our phones, the more that little things like editing are pretty important. And you don't need a lot of money to be a good editor. You do need a lot of money to have a very expensive camera, but you also don't need a very expensive camera to take video anymore. A lot of us have access to iPhones, which yes, are pricey, but it's not like a $20,000 camera. So you have, if you have access to that and you have access to an editing system, you know, like Premiere, you could just see what's out there and experiment and see what draws you and then try to copy it and see if it works.
Very good tips, all of them. And I want to go back to something you had asked about. What are you focusing on? And I'm going to just be honest for a second. I am focused on Watashi wa Star. Like, you know, the video with Megan Thee Stallion and everyone's doing that dance. You know, and I cannot get it out of my brain.
So what is it about that that's drawing you to it?
Well, you know, I think it's because I'm Japanese and Black. And so this video comes out, it's in Japanese, Megan Stallion is Black, and it's like me, right? It's all a combination of me. And I also love her music. I love the song. I think it has a catchy beat. That's what I find myself focused on. Now, having said that, I am trying to build my brand. And what I think is another great actionable tip for folks who are trying to build brands, you know, especially among journalists, I'm going to say, is we often try to do everything ourselves. And what I am allowing the universe to say to me is ask for help, seek people who can support. And one of the things I did when I was thinking about doing this podcast, because my background is in writing. So I found a service called Upwork and found someone who runs a company called SaaSPod, and they are the ones helping me to, you know, make sure the sound is great and the editing is great. And I think as journalists, sometimes we're like, okay, we have to do it all. We have to build our own social media platforms, our own website. But what I'm learning through this process of enlisting others in my world and kind of giving me those skills is we shouldn't have to do it alone.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you brought up Upwork because they're amazing. And it reminds me of finding my illustrator on Fiverr to illustrate the children's book. Someone the other day mentioned to me they had a virtual assistant. And it's like, I know about virtual assistants. How come I haven't really looked into it?
Full admission, I have one too now.
I'm so jealous. And we need to talk after this because I need the info for how you did that. But yes, I think that these things, asking for help and finding it, could also just really open up that time that we talked about for balance and for those passion projects while doing your job really well too, in addition to that.
And also, I think as journalists, you know, if you've been in the field for a few years or more, we're good at what we do. But now we're in the space where if we have to build a brand, we need to think about what's working on social media. And as you can see or hear, my tastes don't necessarily align to maybe I should be looking for other people, because you know, I'm finding it really hard, right, to know what to post, to know how to grow. And I know that when I've done workshops in the past, you know, that's a big concern with nonprofit leaders, with journalists who are concerned about online harassment, you know. So what would be some advice that you would give to folks who do want to, you know, make sure that people see their stories, their work, build a following, and perhaps they need subscribers to support their newsletter. Are there any tips that you could offer?
It's so hard because what I really want to say is, like, you don't need a following to be a good journalist. And I think that's like goes without saying, but I just have to say that because there was a point in my career where I felt like I needed a big following to be a good journalist. And I had already been working in the field for years. So I can only imagine how, yeah, students feel, or people just starting in journalism, but it might be important to some people, but I don't think it should be. I think that if you have a good story and you're telling a story, you shouldn't need a huge following because you could pitch it to others and it could live on their platforms, which already have this audience for the stories that you're telling, right? So when I was working at ABC News and Good Morning America, I was growing my following a bit, but really I know people who work there who their stories and content just lived on those platforms and they didn't spend much time on their own personal social media. So I would say two things. One, if it overwhelms you and you're like, I'm not sure, I would say just get your handle, secure the platform so you have it if you want to build it up later, right? I do think it's important to spend time on them on the back end and learn, see what's out there, definitely be knowledgeable in it. But if you don't want to post too much, like, I don't think you have to. I think if you're telling good stories and know how to create that content, it could live on other platforms for those outlets, right? Like, you could tell a story, it could go on Good Morning America's Instagram page. It doesn't have to go on yours. So that's one thing. And I tell that to my students too. If they don't want to be posting on their own social media, we have a class Instagram page that they could post on, just like you would do at a news outlet. But I'd say if you do want to build it up and you're looking to get a following, I would say really have a focus. And I think, you know, it's so much easier said than done because it took me so long to be like, what is my focus for a long time? And I still am really interested in nutrition and health. And for a long time, that was my focus. But then there was a time where I was like a general assignment reporter covering everything. And I'm like, I guess my focus is news, but how do I could do that every day on some platforms, but not on others. So I would say follow other journalists and see what they're doing that you like. See who does have a following. What are they posting every day? And how are they posting it? And then also, I would say, stay consistent, you know, on certain platforms, like on, I called it Twitter earlier, I should have said X. But on X, you know, you may want to post every day, right? Whereas on other platforms, maybe on TikTok, you're posting a video every other day, whatever it is. So stay consistent with what that platform needs. And then I think have your focus. And let's say you're a general assignment reporter and you're like, I don't have a focus. Your focus is storytelling. Like, that's also a focus, telling stories. So you don't have to be posting about every story you're telling every day on a platform if it doesn't call for it. But what could you do something else on the back end? Can you show people how you got ready to go out and tell your story? Can you give people tips on how to source interviews? And, you know, like, what can you share about storytelling? So I think even if you're like, oh, I don't have a focus, it's too vague. Like, if you're a journalist, you're a storyteller. And that, I think, is a focus enough. If you want to take it a step further and have like a very specific focus, like AI in journalism, for example. I love it so much. I think you did such a good job with that. I think focusing on that too could bring it to a new level as well.
Thank you. I'm taking all those tips to heart. And, you know, believe it or not, we are almost out of time. You know, I know you have other things to do. So I'm going to ask you about the future. What are the challenges and opportunities that you see for journalists and journalism students in the next decade?
Yes. Well, I do think AI is here to stay. Like I said earlier, you don't have to embrace it, but know about it, learn it. It's just like when I studied journalism, they said, know the rules so you know when to break them, if you want to break them, or to not break them if you don't want to break them, right? It's just like AI. Know it so you know what you want to use, when you want to use it, or what to avoid if you don't want to use it, or how to use it. I think that's really important. I would also say, my husband and I were talking about this last night, and he always brings up how, you know, the internet was here and everyone was like, not everyone, but many people were like, it's a fad. It's not going to be around forever. I think he, you know, at the time, certain people thought that, and it's here and it's like really changed the world. And I think a lot of people are thinking that with AI too, like, it's a fad. It's not going to be here forever. I disagree. I think it's like the internet in a similar way, right? That revolution, specifically Gen AI, right? And so I think what I have been trying to wrap my mind around is like, what is next? What is the next thing after internet, AI, Gen AI? Like, what is next? There will be something else. And I think it's like trying to comprehend infinity. Like, our brains can't do it. Like, I can't comprehend this, but I'm telling myself, like, there will be something else. So it's also just keeping your eye out for that. Like, what will it be? And just jumping on it and staying on top of it is important.
It reminds me of something Buzz Lightyear said: to infinity and beyond. That is where we're going to leave things today with our guest, Olivia Smith. Olivia, thanks so much for being on this show.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a real pleasure.
Thanks for listening to AI in Journalism. If you liked what you heard, please hit that subscribe button. You can also connect with me on LinkedIn to share your thoughts and suggest future topics or even guests. And remember to always keep questioning and keep growing.